Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspective. Hello, Miss Keegan.
Hello, Miss Madigan.
Hello, hello. How are you today?
I'm doing okay. This week I feel like went by quickly, which is always a blessing. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling all right. I'm feeling pretty mellow.
Good.
How about yourself?
I feel pretty good. I was pretty revved up. I was telling Keegan about a couple, comment wars I got in earlier. I hate referring to it as that because I don't want to stoop that low, but I guess that's what it was. But it was funny. I didn't tell you this part. I was literally like, my heart was pounding so hard. And I guess I was like smacking my lips or something while I was writing. Cause like Max just turned to me. He's like, what is wrong with you? He's like, what sounds are you making right now? I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on. I had to like go to the bedroom and like be in quiet to like make a response or else I was gonna scream.
You know, I wonder, and I bet you people have conducted psychological studies as to like the stress that that kind of thing puts on your body. Because I remember when I was on, I remember so long ago, 3 weeks, whenever I was on Facebook and getting
look at
in,
you all wisdomous now.
I know.
When I've been telling you for like a year to delete Facebook and now I'm the one getting in comment wars on
Facebook.
The
tables have turned. but yeah, I mean, I remember sending a risky comment. Like you see something that you're like, oh, I just can't let this pass by.
Yeah.
And you post something that you know, you just opened a can, right? And like people are going to come out of the woodwork for you.
I love opening the cans though. It's so much fun.
It's an
adrenaline
rush.
But it's also bad.
It's an adrenaline rush, but it also spikes my anxiety so bad.
Because
the minute I do that.
And when you see the name pop up that they've responded, it's this like hot feeling in your chest where you're like, oh God.
There's a jolt of energy where you're just like, I've had to like step out and get a glass of water and come back in before I've read comments before. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, that's exactly what I did. It's like I went to my bedroom. I just like laid on my stomach and wrote out my thing on my phone. So I think it was because like I was sitting in the living room with the TV on. I was sitting with Max. My dogs are playing. And I was really upset by what I was reading on my phone. I think there was just like too much going on. And I was getting like super worked up. And I didn't realize I was making those sounds. So when Max like pointed out, I was like, okay, I need to just like refocus, say this as intelligently and as non like poke the bear-y as I can, but still get my point across, you know, because that's the thing is like, there's a beauty in not giving a fuck. And I'm so glad that I've become one of those people, which of course I give a fuck on things that matter. I deeply, deeply care for people, but I don't really give a fuck if you don't agree with the things that I believe in, because I believe that I'm believing the right things. You know what I mean? And if you don't want to be a part of that, then you don't have to be a part of that. So that's why I think I don't feel so bad about commenting things, because I don't really care what people have to think about me and my views.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All right.
Just, yeah.
Okay. Should we get into the news, Keegan?
For sure. Okay. So the first thing that I have is a bummer. And if you've been on the internet at all, I think that you know what I'm going to talk about here. I was actually surprised because I had a board meeting last night with my fellow board members for the theater company that we're a part of, just trying to figure out a way to go forward in these times because LA just completely shut down. California just shut down again. And I was talking to them, just catching up because I hadn't talked to them in a while. And our friend of the podcast, Vanessa, I brought this up and she was like, what? Huh? And I was like, how do you not know about this? Which will just show you what happens whenever you have two children under the age of 5.
God bless you. So, goddess bless you, Vanessa,
honestly,
I should say.
Yeah, she's working from home as well. And
she
started a new job.
Oh, and she has the two cutest kids. My God. So
they're
cute.
They're adorbs. Shout out to Joey and Oscar.
Hey.
But I wanted to just mention, because I realized there was so much that we had been talking about that we didn't bring this up last week. But last week, Naya Rivera, who is the actress from Glee, went missing. She went missing on Wednesday last week, July 8th. And what happened was she was boating. She had rented a pontoon boat at Lake Peru, which is this place here in Southern California. And I guess the residents there at Lake Peru have been saying for a long time, they've been asking that officials put up signs around the lake because the lake is incredibly dangerous. There are these undercurrents at certain times of year
right.
and certain times during the day that can pull people under and have done in the past.
Right. Well, and she was on a pontoon boat with her son. And I don't know, Keegan, were you around lakes a lot growing up? Being where you're from.
Yeah.
So like I've been on a lot of pontoons and stuff, and the image of, because the way that they described the story of what happened, they said that her son Josie,
who was four,
yes, and Naya were swimming and this undercurrent came, and so they I think I also read somewhere that there was no anchor dropped on the boat or something, but I don't know if that's true.
I believe that's true. I'm not certain about that either, but what I do know is that she was swimming with him, holding mm-hmm. him because he's four.
But still, if you're holding, like I've had to swim with, you know, my 8-year-old under my arm, and it's hard to swim. So if you've got waves coming at you and there's this undercurrent trying to pull you under, I can only imagine like the mom's strength that was used to
yes.
hold onto your son and still somehow swim to that boat, get to it. And then you tell the listeners what happened next.
Yeah. So authorities have basically said that they surmise that, judging by the circumstances and also what her son Josie had to say when they were able to get to him, is that she was able to use her last bit of strength to kind of hoist her son into the boat, but she didn't have enough strength, or the undercurrent was too strong that it pulled her under. Because, and this breaks my heart, what Josie said was he felt his mom push him up onto the boat, and then he turned around and saw her go under.
And how traumatizing.
Yes.
When I read that article where they said that this morning, and I was absolutely gutted. That poor
yeah.
child mm-hmm. who's only 4 years old. Just from what I've read, you know, the way he described what happened, obviously childlike, he's 4 years old, but like trying to make those pieces fit in your head when you're four of what happened to your mom. Like,
right.
I can't imagine what that kid is going through.
There had to have been a certain amount of expecting her to come back as well, because what happened was they realized when the pontoon boat didn't come back, because it was rented, and I think the place they rented it from was closing, and they realized the pontoon boat didn't come back. That's when they started searching for her. And he was alone on this pontoon boat for something like 2 hours is what they're estimating. So this poor 4-year-old boy is just kind of floating out in the lake himself.
And I guess he was asleep when they found him. And there's something so
yeah.
sad about that, where it's just kind of like, I mean, obviously I don't know what was going on in his mind, but it maybe just like, okay, maybe if I just fall asleep, you know, when I wake up, mommy will be back, because mommy's there when I wake up. You know, there's
right.
just this,
Yeah, I would think that just in my mind, I mean, even as an adult person, there's a certain amount of denial and disbelief, even as an adult who can like rationalize about things. And you might think like, okay, I just need to wait and they'll come back, you know. And I remember last Wednesday when I heard this, the first thing I thought was Natalie Wood. The first thing I thought
Same.
Was like, oh, she's not coming back. I had this belief from the beginning. I still held out hope that they would find her.
Mm-hmm.
But as the days wore on, they didn't find her. And I think it was on Monday or Tuesday of this week, they did finally
yeah.
find her body.
It was actually on July 13th. And I just want to interject really quick. That was actually the 7-year anniversary of her co-star Cory Monteith's death as well.
Yeah, so the Glee cast, they have just experienced such a tremendous amount of loss.
Yeah.
It's really sad. So Cory Monteith died 7 years ago of a drug overdose. And then their co-star, Mark Salling, also, he had been convicted of child pornography charges,
yeah.
was arrested, and then committed suicide in prison. And so they've lost 3 young cast members.
Yeah.
I mean,
to really, really tragic mm-hmm. circumstances. And it's
yeah.
funny, like Glee is one of those shows that was really, really popular when it came out. Keegan, I think we were like the niche and the age that were you into Glee?
I was for like the first two seasons because I was hugely into musical theater.
Same.
I was very active in the theater community when Glee came out.
Same. So when I didn't like it once it started getting to like top 40 hits, like I really loved the first few seasons so much. But then like we didn't really hear about it for a long time and the popularity of Glee kind of came back. I feel like it's been on Netflix for a while, but I guess people are now just watching it. All this stuff about, I almost called her Rachel. Lea Michele is coming out, which we've all known that she's
we've known that forever.
Not nice. Yeah. That's nothing new, but you know, she's really been under fire lately. And now this it's just like, and there've been all these on BuzzFeed. It's like the craziest Glee moments, the most inappropriate Glee moments. Like there's something about Glee that kind of like got back into the spotlight very recently, like within the last few months, I feel like. And then this shitstorm of tragedy followed. Like it's really weird how it, like they kind of got into the spotlight again and then now this has happened. And something that was so devastating about Naya's death is that her character Santana on the show was a Latina lesbian woman and there was such an
one of the first high school students. Yeah.
And it was a huge I mean that show broke a lot of barriers in a lot of amazing ways the first few seasons. And the outpouring of sadness and support for her family from her LGBTQIA plus fans has been beautiful. Hearing people's stories about how she's helped them come out, you know, as a person of color who is part of the LGBTQ community.
Her storyline, I mean, as much as like by that point, that was probably like end of season two, maybe into season three. I was starting to fade out of Glee at that point. But I did watch sporadically and her storyline of this teenager who was struggling to not only come to terms with her sexuality, but also voice it and come out was really powerful. And it really, really resonated with people because it's such a vulnerable age.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how people do it. I'm 30 years old and I'm just finding my voice. I feel like in standing up for myself and not being concerned about what other people think about me and just trying to live my truth. So very powerful.
Yeah. And there was also such a positive example of a relationship. I haven't watched all of them, so I'm sure the whole show was problematic at times. So I'm sure that, you know, what were the Brittany and Santana, right?
Perfectly.
I'm sure it wasn't perfect, but I know for a lot of people I've been reading that like an example of what just like a normal lesbian relationship would look like, you know, not having it be this big deal.
It didn't feel overly sexualized either, even though, you know, Glee would sometimes sexualize the characters, but I don't feel like their relationship felt sexualized, which I think a lot of shows are guilty of over-sexualizing lesbian relationships.
Oh, yes. Well, and they had the thing that I loved about their relationship when I was watching the show is that they had this, you know, it's a high school show and they had this sweet high school innocence. And I was reading something, I think it was just like a tweet that was put on Instagram or something where somebody said that we need to stop sexualizing sexual orientation because, you know, when we're little, we're not looking at somebody thinking, I want to sleep with them. I want to have sex with them. We're looking at them and thinking, they're cute. I want to hold their hand. I want to date them.
Yeah.
You know, and there's something really pure about seeing a young, healthy lesbian relationship where it isn't overly sexualized, but you still kind of see, you know, their experiences in a relationship as a normal way. You know, it doesn't make it seem like it's this big deal, you know?
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, our thoughts are with her family and the Glee cast and her son in particular and her ex-husband, who I think she still had a decent co-parenting relationship with.
Yeah.
So we're just sending them love because what a devastating, horrible, tragic, and unpredictable event.
I would really love to read her book because I've been reading so much about how people said she was just such a wonderful person. I know she came out with a memoir a while ago and now I have a piqued interest, but I would like to get to know her a little bit better, to know more of her thoughts about her character and things like that. I did also see that, do you remember Taj Mowry, who was on Sister, Sister
and Smart Guy?
I guess he played her boyfriend on a show or something.
On Smart Guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he wrote something about how like that was his first girlfriend and his first love and he'll love her forever. Yes. And there's something that was so sweet to me because like it's that reminder of like you think you're going to have this person around you forever to tell them that you love them. And then when they're gone, it's this desperate thing of like, but I didn't get to tell them how much they still meant to me.
Yeah. You know? I think it's an important reminder, not to get too like woo woo about it, but I think that it's an important reminder to live in the moment.
Yeah.
Because nothing is guaranteed. Living in the past does you no good. Living in the future is not guaranteed. So if you love somebody and you care about them, even if it's someone that you're thinking about right now while you're listening to this, there is no harm in sending somebody a text message and just saying, hey, I'm thinking about you. Want you to know I'm caring about you. I care about you, you know?
Yeah, for me, that's like my biggest, like, I don't know if that would be part of like a love language or what it would be, but whenever...
Words of affirmation.
Words of affirmation, yeah. I'm definitely one of those people where like, I don't want to be this way, but I need to be reassured that I'm loved sometimes. Like, I know that sounds awful, but...
It does not sound awful. Everybody has different ways that they need to be loved. And that is one of the love languages, is words of affirmation. Some people need that.
Yeah.
And again, this is one of my joys. I was actually going to post about this on my Instagram because I have found that something that has been bringing me a lot of joy is if I see something, a selfie someone posted or they wrote something on their story or something, I will send them a message and just say like, oh, you look so beautiful in this picture. And I think giving compliments is really lovely. And if that's something that like you feel inclined to do, just do it. You're going to make somebody's day. You're going to feel good.
That's something that I've always done. Sorry, you guys, my dog is losing her goddamn mind behind me, but, I do that a lot and I do it in person too. And I've been asked by people like, why do you go out of the way to like say that? And I'm just like,
Because
why not? Like and I love that about being a woman too, is that I love that women, even if they don't have like another compliment to say, they'll just compliment you on your shoes or your dress or your shirt or something. And it creates this wonderful solidarity, you know?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So, All right. Well, I want to get into something else that is something that I really hadn't heard, but Max has a cousin in Kentucky who he was talking to about this yesterday. And I wanted to learn more about it. And that is the gentrification in the area in which Breonna Taylor was killed. I think this is something
going to lead right into my next thing.
Is it? Okay, perfect.
Go for it.
So the attorneys for Breonna Taylor's family are alleging that the police targeted her home as part of a Louisville gentrification plan, because in the area there have been at least 8 homes that have been bought and demolished for a, quote, high investment, high dollar real estate deal that will then turn the city into a modern looking city with a, quote, futuristic looking homes, a cafe, an amphitheater, and state of the art fitness centers.
Okay, how about you take care of your people who are there right now?
Exactly.
How about we do that?
Exactly. The Louisville Police Department developed a special squad called the Place-Based Investigators. So they basically were there to address like systemically violent locations and complement the LMPD's existing like deterrence strategy, basically to try to drive these people out of the area. So Breonna didn't live on Elliott Avenue. I believe this is, it's like Russell or Robinson area. I didn't write it down and now I can't remember, but Breonna did not live in this area. Which was a major street involved in the gentrification, but her boyfriend Kenneth did live in that area. And they're saying that there was a car registered to her that had been seen several times at a suspected drug dealer's house. And they're saying that like the cops were saying that the reason that they went there was because they were thinking that the dealer was hiding the drugs at her house and she was like a middleman or something. It's this whole crazy story that they're coming out with. And essentially,
you know, it wouldn't surprise me because in some ways it sounds a little bit like, oh, maybe it's a little conspiracy theory-ish, but it honestly would not surprise me at all.
Well, right.
if that was something that was happening.
And the thing that's like still upsetting about this is that I feel like people use drugs a lot of times as this excuse to like dehumanize the person that was killed, because so what if Breonna was like, or Kenneth's, you know, house had drugs in it that he was holding for somebody? Like, none of that means that you should die and be killed. Like, none of that matters. And I feel like, you know, bringing that up is just another way of just kind of like dishonoring her death and her murder. And essentially, it seems like this gentrification deal is Mayor Greg Fisher's big idea. He wants to have, wants to leave this like visible legacy. So Max's cousin was saying yesterday that, God, I can't remember what they were chanting now. I should have written it down. But that like they went to the mayor's like house or something, and he was talking to somebody and had his back turned, and all these protesters came up and started like chanting something about gentrification, like right behind him. And he got like super like pissed off. Obviously it was like, everybody off my lawn in this whole thing. So luckily people are putting a lot of pressure on the mayor. I actually posted something on my story, my personal Instagram, She's Mad Again today. I should post it on the podcast Instagram as well, but there is a new, I don't know how new it is now, but a new-ish website called forbrianna.com.
It started last week or the week before.
Yeah, I know it's new-ish, and it's so unbelievably helpful. I have Breonna Taylor saved in my phone, so I can just call it from there. But this website is great because they give you email addresses, phone numbers, and other ways to, contact the people that are important to contact.
So the way that it came about was actually, you know, it's so funny. Like, we all think that we're so small, but this person had seen the meme that said it's time to go harder for Breonna Taylor because her name is no longer trending. So they created this website called For Breonna because I understand how daunting it can feel to not know the right thing to say or what to do. And so he created just this website where you can click on the link to send an email. It will give you pointers on what to say. You can set up reminders to remind you to call or email, because this is one of those things. It is truly breaking my heart how long it's taking to get her justice. And I've continued to post almost every single day. And now I used to post the phone number, and now I post forbrianna.com.
Yeah.
Because I think it's an easier way for people to be able to do this.
It definitely is.
We have to continuously apply pressure. And so, to kind of go along with what you were talking about, on Tuesday, protesters gathered outside of the Louisville Attorney General's house, Daniel Cameron's house, to protest her murder. So 87 people were arrested on Tuesday, and they were charged with felonies, which is almost unheard of, not misdemeanors. They were charged with felonies for intimidating.
That was something when I read that. I was like, felonies? Mm-hmm. Really?
Oh, yeah. It's a mess. So they were charged with felonies for intimidating a participant in the legal process. And Linda Sarsour, who is an activist, you would probably recognize her if you saw her. She's an activist, and she was one of the original people, women who organized the first women's march. She said, what a direct action does is it takes us to a direct target. It was very clear that we were going to Attorney General Daniel Cameron's house because he has influence and power over our demand. We had a singular demand: arrest and charge the cops involved in the murder of Breonna Taylor. And so they came in, he felt threatened, and they arrested 87 people, some of whom spent 17 to 24 hours in jail, sleeping on concrete floors. And for a lot of these activists, it wasn't the first time that they've spent a night in jail seeking justice for Breonna. A lot of these people who were arrested on Tuesday had been arrested at protests in the past asking for justice for Breonna. And Linda Sarsour, she took issue with the charges, like we were saying, against her and the others. She admitted that they were trespassing. They can't deny that they were trespassing. They were in front of his house. But being charged with a felony, she said, quote, but we are being charged with a felony as an intimidation tactic by the LMPD in hopes that they believe we will never do this again because of that charge. We are not intimidated. They planned, as soon as they got out, they were planning protests for the next day.
Because like, that's the thing, is that people who really want to make a change, that doesn't deter you.
Absolutely.
Like being arrested and things like that doesn't stop you from doing it. So this intimidation that they're trying to use on them doesn't work. In fact, it probably makes them angrier and want to fight even more.
Exactly. So when people were coming out of detainment on Wednesday, they, you know, everyone gathered at the jailhouse. They were all chanting outside. And as people came out, so one Louisville resident who had actually volunteered to be arrested, because that's a thing when you go to protests, before the protests begin, if they know that it's likely to be a something that you could possibly get arrested for.
Right.
They will sometimes ask you who is willing to be arrested.
Yeah, who could afford to be arrested? That's the thing, right, for me. I'm like, if I could afford it, I would get arrested, no problem.
Yeah. And so Sidney Williams had agreed to be arrested, and he walked out with his arms above his head. He, you know, someone came up right away with food. Someone came up right away to give him his phone back. And he said, everyone needs to start putting their bodies on the line if they can, because they will detain us for 17 hours instead of arresting the cops that killed Breonna Taylor. I'll gladly go back to jail until you arrest the cops that killed Breonna Taylor.
Exactly.
So, I mean, really, it just stoked the flames of this. And actually, you know, it put the mayor, Greg Fisher, under even more intense pressure.
Yeah.
So he's now being investigated for the way that he has handled the protesters, and also the way that he has handled the case in general. So the Government Oversight and Audit Committee has filed an order to officially launch an investigation, quote, into the action and inaction of the Fisher administration. So we'll see what happens there.
It's so frustrating to me. And it's, the thing is that this is just the first battle too. Like, getting arrested in, like, that's just one small piece of the puzzle. Like, is it going to go to a grand jury? Are we going to get a trial? Will we get justice? It's just like already not seeing
two of the three police officers are still police officers.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like, to me, I just don't, like, I'm starting to feel a little bit hopeless. I know I shouldn't.
Me too.
But for me, it's like, I just don't think they're going to let it go very far, is my point. I just think that, like, you know, maybe one day, I don't even think they'll get arrested. I don't know, Keegan.
I don't know either.
When there are murals and, you know, social media posts and pressure like no other, how do these two still have jobs? I just don't get it.
I really think that they're just hoping that the pressure will die down. They just keep waiting hoping that it's going to die down.
I'll call 10 years from now. I don't care.
It hasn't. I don't think that it will. But the fact that they have not acted yet really makes me believe that they aren't going to.
Well, the thing is that a higher level of authority needs to get involved. So I'm glad that there is an investigation there. I hope that there is a outside investigation, either that the family is hired or something that is looking into this and can somehow get enough evidence to finally get an arrest and a conviction.
Right. Well,
we need these people that are, you know, we can't trust the Louisville mayor and the government to get anything done. It has to be about the people who are, you know, working the ground and getting it done.
Hopefully the mayor will be removed from office.
Yeah.
Because the state law does give the Metro Council, who are the ones who are investigating the mayor's action, it does give them the power to remove him from office if they find misconduct. So it's possible that he will get removed from office, but whether or not that will mean anything substantial for Breonna's case or, and this is something that we haven't even really talked about, but David McAfee, who was a chef there in Louisville who was killed by police during one of the protests.
Yeah.
Greg Fisher, the mayor, is also under investigation for his death as well. So hopefully they both find some amount of justice, but just removing the mayor from office isn't going to give justice to those people or their families.
That's a very political move. To me, that would be a lot of false promises. Like, look, we got the guy out. And I just don't know.
Well, it's performative.
Yeah,
it's the same thing that we're seeing right now. I mean, there are all of these symbolic gestures that I'm like, I don't care. I don't care if you stop calling the master bedroom the master bedroom. I don't give a fuck. Like, none of this matters to me. Like, thank you for painting Black Lives Matter on the road. That's nice. It's pretty. But that's not what we're asking for.
Exactly.
Like, you can remove the mayor from office, but unless you charge the cops who killed Breonna Taylor, unless you take action against the people who murdered David McAfee or McAtee, sorry, I keep saying McAfee, McAtee, it doesn't matter to
yeah,
me.
It's,
I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that's a really big problem right now. And I think that it's good to celebrate the small victories, but
100,
not
yeah.
to be satisfied with anything yeah, less course. Than I'm glad the end objective.
That, I'm glad that Aunt Jemima is being taken off the packaging. I love all the Black Lives Matter murals. I love all of the attention that's being put on this. I love that the Redskins are going to change their mascot. I love
now
all
the,
of those
now
things.
Now the owner is under... more shit.
I mean,
I hear all the sports drama politics from my boyfriend.
They're all good things, but I'm like, but what we're asking for is systemic change, not symbolic change.
Yeah.
Systemic change to the oppressive systems that are in place.
Right.
And people aren't going to stop showing up and getting arrested and doing whatever they have to do.
Yeah.
Until that happens.
Exactly. And another thing is that it just cannot be removed from our minds. We talk about this every single week about maintaining a steady pace, doing as much that is, you know, obviously healthy for you, but really not forgetting, you know, what this time has brought us, you know, it's brought us to education and self-reflection, and it shouldn't end just because we're not seeing yes. social media covered with Black Lives Matter yeah. stuff anymore. We need to continue to pump it out. We need to continue to, you know, better ourselves and educate ourselves. I'm speaking yeah. as a and white person, you know.
Let me plug. So again, I'm listening to Tara Brock's mindfulness podcast. She's got a PhD, but she's a wonderful just storyteller and like has really been helpful to my anxiety. And she put out an episode about sustaining our caring in like a compassionate way, in a way that still preserves you, but allows you to kind of like move forward at the same time.
Exactly.
So if that's something that you're interested in, check that out, because I understand it's daunting. It's hard to know how to strike a balance between being an activist and preserving your mental and emotional health.
Right.
It's difficult.
I think for me, it's been a lot about dipping my toes into different things that are interesting me just whenever they pop into my head. You know, and buying books or reading articles, just whenever a thought pops into my head, like, I don't really know anything about that, or I want to know something more about that, just looking it up is really, really helpful, instead of being like, eh, I'll look into that later or whatever. You know, and just doing little things every day and having a variety of things for me to look into has been really helpful as well. But then also kind of narrowing it down, if you're a person that, you know, this is really daunting and you want to break it down into one thing that you can really focus on, then find that one. Maybe it's Breonna Taylor. Maybe getting justice mm-hmm. for Breonna is your thing, and that's the thing you're going to stick with. There's so many ways that you can do this that can still, you know, protect your own mental health and stability. And, you know, for all of you who are still fighting the good fight, educating yourselves, listening to us, you know, listening to other podcasts that give you good information, I mean, as long as you're doing that, you know,
yeah,
you're doing something and you're doing good.
Totally.
You know? All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to another episode. I guess if you do want to send us things to talk about in the news, you're more than welcome to, although I think we've got plenty of shit to talk about all the time now. But if you want to email us for anything, go ahead and email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. You can also direct message us on Instagram at Angry Neighborhood Feminist and follow us there. We have a Twitter at YAMF Podcast,
YANF
Podcast. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can rate and review us on the business page, and you can chat with the other listeners on our group page. If you don't already, go ahead and listen to us on Radio Public. It's a free way for you to listen, and it helps us out a little bit. And I did not forget to remind you to review us on Apple Podcasts as well. I promise. I just went out of order. All right. With all of that being said, we encourage you to rage on.
Bye.